Hey, right. Everybody.
Welcome to our next episode of IsCast. What is this, 4th? April?
Number 4.
Yep, this is before we started in January.
April 7th.
And we have everybody here today again. We got Wade, David, Austin, Ben, and myself, Lee. And we're going to kick it off. We don't have too many company updates. I think we're going to start with some regional news. Wade, I know you had some stuff for the basically Minnesota's movement to incite people to make more films here.
Mainly big budget films.
Yeah, well, I guess it's aimed at bringing in people all over the place to bring money into the community. At signon.org, there was this petition. It has a few hundred signatures. It could always use more. We'll try and link.
Is there like a name?
It's called, the name of the petition is Pass Film Incentive Program. Okay. That's what it says. It's anyway, it says to be delivered to the Minnesota State House, the Minnesota State Senate, and Governor Mark Dayton.
And that's because there's a bill, right, that's going to be going through.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. We're trying to bring back more of the funding that was taken away about 15 years ago.
The petition statement says, pass a film incentive program to attract large film projects and television programs in Minnesota.
Cool.
So it's cool to see, people in the area still excited to make this area grow as far as a market for filmmaking, which is really cool and what we want to be a part of.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, yeah, we signed the petition. I'm sure we're going to try to find other ways to get involved. Hopefully they're...
Yep. I got my ear to the ground on this one. I have a few guys I'm connected to online that are, like Todd Cobbery, Eric Howell, guys that are really in tune with the film community here. So, I'll make sure to report back about this one.
Maybe they'll have something at the Capitol or...
That yeah, that's something I've been keeping an eye out at the Minnesota Film and TV Board website for that because any opportunity we can have to actually go down and talk to someone face to face will go a long ways for it. Which and depending on where our listeners are from too, if you are interested in getting some film stuff done in your area, definitely go down, talk to your state representative or your city representative.
Yep. And make sure to check out mnfilmtv.org. They're a big part of this effort too. Under what we do, the number one is attract production in Minnesota through the Snowbait Incentive Program, a 15% to 20% rebate on eligible film expenditures. So, obviously, other places like in the Midwest, like Michigan or like Toronto, these places have much better tax incentives than us.
Yeah, I think Michigan, I think I said last time, I think they have about 100 million set aside.
Just and we have 145,000 set aside.
if you're interested into these things, I believe Snowbait is actually like a reimbursement program.
Yeah, it's 20% of your total production costs, and you have to be in post-production to be able to apply.
Correct. And and that's for specifically stuff you're having done in Minnesota.
Yep.
So if you're having VFX artists, you have to have receipts,
all sorts of stuff.
Aren't they leaning more towards films that show off, parts of Minnesota?
No, I just think the work has to be.
I'm thinking of specific grants. They have grants for films that show off parts of Minnesota. Yeah,
probably. No, the Snowbait and the Snowbait can be pretty much anything, anything artsy. Multimedia. They're very open. And the filmtv.org website does have a counter of the funds available. I'm not sure what it was at, but it's just hard though, because you need to be very organized. You need to track all of your payments.
The counter is at 145,000
and it's not for setting your budget. It's just to, when you're almost done,
to help you out a little bit.
So that's kind of how they talked about it, and it's geared with
using Minnesota artists or locations or whatever. excuse me, and about giving back to that community and sort of rewarding your work that you're putting in around here.
And, you know, I'm not saying we're going to be applying for this anytime soon, but when we do, yeah, it is important to make sure to keep the receipts and all that. I remember when I was interning on his playground, they made me give the, I forget who it was someone in the central office. I had to keep my receipt from Wendy's that I got for lunch while I was helping, you know, put together sets. They wanted to keep all that.
Yeah. And again, with it being a rebate, it's also encouraging the idea of hiring the Minnesota artists to do stuff as well. And so encouraging the paying the Minnesota people for the work that they do. So it doesn't really work if you're just trying to get some friends together and film a little short. You have to spend a little money first.
Right.
Well, I think we can transition into some more fun topics. Ben, what is this pub crawl thing in Minnesota? I'm trying to find a website and I can't.
Oh, it was on Facebook. The event was on Facebook.
Well, I found the 2012 one, but...
Gotcha. So, it's the second annual Pokemon pub crawl in Minnesota.
What area? Oh, come on. I do have an Ash costume from...
I saw pictures.
Was it last year?
No, I think it was two years ago.
Pretty good day.
It was 2 years ago.
It was pretty awesome.
All right. So what do you do in the Pokemon pub crawl?
So are you familiar?
Gotta drink 'em all. Is that what it's called?
I think maybe probably.
Gotta drink 'em all.
So are you familiar with?
No. Okay. So I need you to tell me everything.
So in Pokemon, or if you've watched the series, or
I know what Pokemon is.
Yeah.
I don't know what the pub crawl is.
Assume that our viewers know.
Tell me about the pub crawl.
Okay. So in Pokemon, you go from like one gym to another, and getting badges and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then there's Elite Four at the end.
It says we can't go.
So yeah, it's
says entry fees due by April 1st.
Yeah. I had told you that.
Continue, Ben. Continue.
Anyway, Each bar that participates in this has their own drink, they have badges too that you can get.
That's cool.
Yeah, and then so eventually it goes. You can get each badge by drinking their drink or whatever, and then I think you go to the Elite Four, which is at Blarney's in Dinkytown, and they have like four shots you take there. So in all, it should be like around 12 drinks.
When you complete the fourth shot, are you finally confronted by your childhood rival?
and then he embarrasses you
in front of everyone because you're not prepared.
Theoretically, I mean, you should be doing that throughout the entire night because in the game he comes out and you encounter him all the time. All
right.
But I mean, you could if you and I were in a pub crawl, you could be my rival. And, we'd have, like, random drinks.
And I would come in every now and then and be like, "Hi, Ben, you think you're better than me?"
Does this mean we can't go?
Voice. It was great.
Does this mean we can't go?
Well, you can go. It's just at this time that you can't.
What?
You can't sign up for it anymore. I told you this.
I'll come out of the bushes. You'll never drink them all.
I do have ping pong Pokeballs that I painted for my costume too.
It's a little small. I guess
those
are
small.
They are small.
Those
things were so
blow up
and cool and futuristic.
See, my big problem with Pokemon is what was so great about the gym leaders, because everybody can beat them. So why are we paying them?
They're not the normal person
currently,
though.
My problem is the way you're pronouncing it.
What?
You said Pokemon.
Pokemon.
Okay, there you go.
Okay, don't say Pokemon.
No, that's gross.
Do you know what Pokemon is short for?
Pocket Monsters?
Pocket Monsters. Oh, man. Came out from Japan. I knew about that 2 years before it came to the States.
Here it comes. All right, so that's happening in Minnesota. We're proud of that.
Yeah.
I don't mean to alarm anybody, except but that they I can't definitely go. Rewrote the lyrics to the Pokemon theme song.
Did they?
With a drink 'em all theme.
Where is that?
It's on their Facebook thing.
That is fantastic.
I'm on the Facebook.
All right.
Oh, my. Well, moving away from the pub scene.
I suppose we could move on from there.
There's some very important event. One of my favorite events to watch, along with CES and E3, is going on right now.
This is on the national and international level.
Big scale, which is NAB.
Which stands for National
National Association of Broadcasters.
Yep.
So if you want to know what the newest video or broadcasting equipment be, or lights,
post-production,
audio,
you watch NAB like a hawk. That's where like Red has done a bunch of their announcements about like the Red Scarlet and the Red Epic, I think, were both announced at NAB's.
Mm-hmm.
Their big one this year, I think they're just trying to push their Red Ray player, which is a device that enables you to broadcast or to go do 4K.
Mm-hmm.
What's their... I'm trying to find their website because they are streaming. Okay, NABshow.com.
Yep.
And they're streaming live right now, right?
Is that what you said, Wade? NABshow.com.
Yeah.
And if you just go there, they have part of the show streaming live.
Some keynotes.
I haven't looked into what is going to be coming out this year. Still need to do that, but...
Yeah, this is only the second day of the conference, so I'm sure a lot of the bigger notes are going to be coming out today, tomorrow.
I do know that Adobe is going to have a significant presence there. Apple is rumored to have a Ninja Stealth presence there.
Yeah, they do. Yep.
I know that last year they were quietly announcing updates for Final Cut. I don't think anything more is going to happen this year at NAB for them.
Well, the big thing for that is I think, though, starting with at NAB, they're having a new marketing push for Final Cut Pro X because there was the bit of the fallout of professional users. So they've gotten a couple of big names.
But it seemed like that was almost intentional on their part to do that.
Well, judged by this marketing push to try and get them back, I guess.
Because they made a mistake.
Okay, so are there any big cameras or anything coming out that you saw that caught your eye, David?
Cameras, no, not that I saw, but there was a new bit of camera gear that, who found that?
I didn't.
Here, the Bended?
Yeah.
This fantastic new Steadicam, or not a Steadicam arm, Steadicam being a brand name, but it's called it's by a company called FreeFly, and it's the FreeFly Movi, which is this digitally operated camera stabilizer. So it's able to compensate and level a camera without the use of a counterweight. Because normally if you want to do something like that, you need to have a big vest with a spring shock-absorbing arm and counterweights for the camera in order to keep the camera steady when you're doing tracking shots or you're running after somebody. Mm-hmm. And this system looks absolutely stunning.
And it's light.
And it's very light. I think it's 2.3 pounds, I believe.
The short that we were watching in particular has the DP on rollerblades holding onto the side of a taxi holding this thing.
Yeah.
Yep. It's really well set up that with a traditional Steadicam arm with the vest and the arm and everything, if I were to be using it, I need to be running my blocking and pointing the camera in the right direction and making sure we're still framed and making sure we're in focus, mm-hmm. all while not falling over and breaking several thousand dollars worth of equipment. Mm-hmm. Where this system is really fantastic because it has the option for a remote operator. So a DP or cinematographer could be sitting in a nice comfy chair and controlling these motors so the camera's pointed where it needs to be. And so the operator of this stabilizer only has to worry about running. That's it.
Yeah.
No, there's a wonderful shot in the little, they have a behind the scenes video where they're in the taxi and the camera operator is focused on holding this camera as steady as he can. And then you can see whomever is controlling this, the camera will pan 8-10 degrees up and down
as the guy's holding it.
Yeah. As he's holding it. So one person can hold the physical camera and somebody else can actually.
No, I experienced that when we were trying to film the Dawn Under Heaven teaser, and it would be amazing because like I could barely, like I was just focusing on running and not falling, and so it's like I had no idea what I was filming. I was just like
run, point
in the general direction.
It turned out good.
The article was this, the first article that Ben found was on Gizmodo, mm-hmm. and they were talking about how this could really revolutionize how Steadicam operation is done.
The problem is though the model that's coming out is the M10, which only supports 10 pounds at the moment.
Oh, okay.
So it's pretty much only targeted at DSLRs for now.
Yeah.
Or like a small rad that doesn't have any accessories.
Yep. And there's that version, and then there's going to be a lighter version. I want to say it's going to be like the M7 or something.
Yeah. There's going to be a bigger one, M20.
Yeah. The current one they have, it's going to be pricing for about $15,000 for that M10.
That's the M10, yep.
Yep. And then there's going to be the lighter one that is going to be around 7,500.
And they point out that in reality, the price is pretty cheap compared to buying all the extra gear in order sliders and
the other thing is, I mean, this thing is made out of carbon fiber, which is not an inexpensive material to produce a product in.
Yep.
Yeah.
We wanted to make one, but it's
a bit complicated. So that's going to that's been added to our purchase list, along with everything else.
We'll
we want
to
buy.
We'll put a pin in it for now.
As awesome as it is, though, I'm still a little wary about it because, like, there's more that's added into the situation of filming. Like, you have to have batteries; it has to be charged.
They don't have to be charged.
But that's the point of it, though. Like the scenes that were amazing was they had two of them that I saw where he's like walking and there's like this hoop thing and he's it's so light that he just passes he the through. Camera through the loop to himself,
yeah,
and keeps going. And then they also had one where they had a guy strapped into a helicopter, and the guy's walking towards the helicopter. He hands it off to the other operator, mm-hmm. and then they take yeah. off mm-hmm. in one shot.
Yeah, and like, the idea of
doing
having
those type of movements was not possible.
Yeah, and before. I think that, you know, yes, you have to deal with batteries, and you have to have the operator to do the remote
what if
controlling.
Something breaks.
Well,
you
but
can't have a technician who can work with a motherboard and stuff like that, or a circuitry.
But at the same time, think about all the stuff you're saving. Because, like, to do that taxi shot, so the guy, he's rollerblading up behind the taxi. The girl gets in the taxi. He grabs onto the handle.
He just sketches rail on the taxi.
He hangs onto it and drives for a bit. Then he lets go and he goes off. If you wanted to do that shot with traditional gear, you'd have to do it in three different shots with three different sets of gear.
You know,
you have to run up to it and have a dolly track and then have a crane. Yeah. To do those exact same things.
I'm sure they blocked that before they started holding the camera because yeah. the way he let go and it like glided off. Imagine just like hitting a little like ledge in the curb.
Oh yeah.
There
yeah.
you go.
Obviously yeah. you have to plan it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's
but they made it look so elegant.
And it's so much lighter too, because the vest that I'm designing and making is gonna be no less than 20 pounds. Just for the vest and the arm and the counterweight, and then we're going to yeah. be adding about a 5 pound camera, or two to 5 pound camera on top of yeah. that.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to get really cumbersome to wear if you have to do that for a couple hours, or you know, 2.3 pounds yeah. on top of.
But
a
it would just be
camera.
More useful if we just need to like, hey, let's just go to this part in the city, you know, quick block it out, do our shot, and then you just move on. Where if you get more complicated equipment, you have to like set it up. You know, we have to get crates and.
Apple
wagons
boxes
and where this can be a suitcase
yeah.
that someone carries in.
Yeah, and that, I think that's really the advantage to a piece of gear like this is it can be operated by one person. You can take it to places that you could not take traditional pieces of gear.
Yep.
So mm-hmm. you can go hiking around, you know, in the mountains or whatever. I'm just imagining somebody on skis with this thing or...
I wouldn't put my camera on that, but
well,
but
you
know, no, you, like have it, a, you have an excellent
like
point.
It'd be cool if they make like additional things where you could like... attach it to your shoulders and it just kind of like hung out in front of you
yeah
and like stabilize itself or
yeah and the yeah. other the other nice thing is another piece of really simple camera tech is a fig rig, so just basically a ring and the camera sits in the middle, so it's the kind of thing you could hold it out and you can have the camera pointed back at yourself or you can have it gone the other way, so it's basically a really really simple to make steady cam, and this thing can do that job, so it can do the job of a fig rig and a steady cam and a dolly all in one.
Yeah.
The only thing you can't do is be a crane. No.
And what it's going to change is the idea behind it, the technology. It's pretty simple. It's just, mm-hmm. it's IMUs. It's the same technology in your cameras. It's a gyro,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
measurement tool, pitch yaw, whatever. And then they're just using direct drive systems to be able to make the changes in real
mm-hmm.
time.
Yeah.
So it's like, even scaling it up from there, you could make bigger systems and even for the professional on screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would be excited to see someone's probably going to make a very large version that you can mount on a helicopter, because helicopter shots are already pretty level as they are, but this on top of that, especially when if the helicopter needs to do some very intricate flying, I think it'd be really, really awesome.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
The future
cool.
is here.
The future.
Yeah.
Working toward it.
Prepare to be whelmed.
Right.
do we have anything else for NAB as far as film ish? NAB. What do you have?
4K monitors.
I won't.
No, that was from
last year.
That was CES. That was a there's probably going to be 4K monitors here that are more specifically geared towards broadcasters.
Yeah.
Probably
just,
at our next podcast.
You just need so much more for the pipeline to support 4K.
Yeah. Although that has its whole batch of problems with 4K. We have no physical media for it.
Coming out with the TVs.
Well, you know what? Yeah. People said.
What I mean, like, but there's no disc.
What do they call it?
Ultra HD. So what are they going to call 5K? We have the Red Epic can shoot in 5K. So is that going to be mega ultra high?
That'll be something
super
else.
Awesome HD.
Nobody liked HD DVD.
Yeah.
And that was way too many letters.
Yeah.
You know what? People said the same thing about HD when it came out. When I got the Sony Z1U, people were like, oh, TVs don't even show display in 1080. Why would you get that camera?
Yeah.
But, you know, workflows change. 4K has been rolling out every year with different products.
And that's the point, though, with shooting larger and framing it farther back for things like... framing it up in post-production or stabilization, because you lose the edges and stuff like that, it can be really beneficial to getting those higher sure. res for tracking.
But even
like
even if you can't display in 4K, that's only part of it. I mean, those cameras tend to get a high range of latitude, so you can push your shadows or your highlights, and you can get a really nice exposure regardless of the lighting, which is one of the main draws.
Yeah, and with cameras. Those nicer cameras, I don't know if there's any 4K camera that doesn't shoot in RAW. So you're able to affect everything after the light has hit the sensor in post. So you can change your ISO, everything.
I'd have to look into it. I do know of, obviously, the Red, the Alexa, and the Blackmagic.
Yep.
But I haven't heard, I guess I haven't heard specifically of any other 4K camera. I know Sony has one.
There's, JVC has one.
Does it do RAW?
Yeah.
Canon has 4K
DSLRs.
Really?
Not a DSLR. They're EOS cinema cameras. They have two of the C300 and the C500. I want to say the 500 shoots in 4K. At the 300 only shoots in 2K, I believe.
Well, I guess that's everything for NAB. It'll be hard to tell for sure until we go to our next podcast when it's all said and done and people have reviewed the products and kind of seen what's what.
Wade and I will have a really big list to talk about.
Well, I think we can switch over to games. I know Austin found a interesting article. His name's Daniel Cook. He used to work at Microsoft. Looks like, was this originally posted on Google Plus?
It was, yeah. I found it through Reddit, actually. Somebody linked it through that. And it's this guy, Daniel Cook. It talks about his experience working at Microsoft and feeling sort of like a black sheep, feeling like he was one person who was not... he didn't feel like he fit in with the corporate culture of Microsoft, which he described as sort of this machismo, you know, enthused with violence kind of culture, which, you know, this is one person's experience. So it's
because
not,
he wanted to make fun, happy games.
Yeah, he said that his game styles trend much more toward Nintendo and Disney than they would toward, you know, traditional AAA titles. And basically what this says is, it's him questioning the industry, saying, do we need more of this when we already have so much of it? Hmm. You know, do we need Gears of War 5? Do we need, you know, another 11 Call of Duties in the next 5 years kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
And it was just interesting to hear somebody who has spent time in the industry come out of it and talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something that it seems like Nintendo has dealt with, because they do not go in that direction at all with you know, the style of their games.
Yeah.
You tend to not see... I mean, they do have a few of those games. I guess not Gears of War, but there's some Call of Duty, you know, Medal of Honor, but it's not nearly as much, and it's not as advertised as much. They're mm-hmm. emphasized on, like, I guess... I don't know.
Do you think that's more because of their target audience of age-wise?
Maybe.
I definitely...
People where I think he's... What he's trying to point out is more... the providing adults more of Nintendo-ish, because I wouldn't. Yeah, there's games. Yeah, I'd play some Super Mario Brothers and the jumping games, the platform games. Like, those are fun, but I wouldn't specifically want to buy some of the other games that are clearly targeted towards younger.
But I mean, we get to an interesting point, because, like, look at the original Super Mario Brothers. I mean, would you call that a kid's game or an adult game? It's kind of ambiguous to me. But nowadays,
they were all adult games.
But, well, like, if a game came out...
Subject matter-wise.
A game came out nowadays that was, like, Super Mario Bros. Style platformer, I mean, would you think of it as in the same light, I guess? Would you think of it as an adult game?
Yeah, there was one I recently played, which was Braid, which is indie-developed. Extremely popular.
Yeah.
And actually, he even had, at the end of the scene, he had the little thing of, like, this... Oh, you've missed the princess, you know, she's in another castle. And so it's like, it kind of takes from, but he added this, like, time control mechanism to it.
If you haven't played it, you should pick
it
up.
There was a sale on Steam, and I picked it up. And
just pick it up.
How much is it?
Just played it. A couple bucks.
Okay.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a little older. Great. But he added this story element. I don't think I even understood it. It was very, like, psychological, like, story he wrote, and... definitely not kid like focused at all.
Okay.
Maybe the gameplay would be, you know, like, you know, you're just jumping on enemies and controlling time and stuff like that. But
Well, I think the idea that Wade's sort of hinting at, and that I'm going to bring to light here, is that it has not been until like maybe the last 10 years that we've seen a division between what we would call games for kids and games for adults.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were just developed. People just made games, and they were for whoever was going to play them. But now that the industry has found so much success and is starting to get such a generational foothold, there are people who are our parents' age who are still avid gamers. And so they're not necessarily interested in the same types of experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the people that started making games were making games for themselves.
Yeah.
So now it's such an industry that if you watch any Saturday night cartoons, you get all the online mini superheroes online, play, ask your parents for permission. You know, right. There's all that stuff now, which is clearly run by corporate sponsors, whoever is trying to promote their product. And, go buy the little sets and collections and collectibles.
Buy the time cards. And that was the other thing that this guy touched on was do we need more of this violent material? Do we need more of this?
Okay.
I think it has its place. I definitely think with the indie community, though, they haven't done that, such as Braid and other Fuzz and all these other games Minecraft. That have gone more back to this platform. They've tons of 2D games have come out. They don't have the same market. You know, obviously, it's not backed by Microsoft. It's not backed by Valve. Obviously, Valve have Steam now through which people can release their content, and even Bungie's trying to, I forgot what was theirs called that they're trying to they did like a Steam iOS game.
That was actually a different developer.
They have a channel that people can indie developers can go to them and be like,
they
hey,
started
can you
that,
ha-
but they
you
didn't really go
out?
Any further with it though.
Yeah, I think they're only taking on one or two people though. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure there's something in production, but. Yeah. So it's really cool that they're giving focus to the people, and obviously Minecraft's probably the biggest example of that. Obviously it has, zombie-ish monster thing. It's kind of a side thing though.
But it's interesting how much people have played within that game.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people, and there's whole channels on YouTube just devoted to people that are just making things in that game. So making big cities or giant structures, things like that.
Yeah. My roommate and I have recently been playing a mod for Minecraft called MineZ, which is like a Minecraft version of DayZ, which was originally a mod for a game called Arma 2. So we can stack these 5-6 high here, but It takes the idea of Minecraft and it uses it like I think they'd like you to, which is as a set of toys. Like, this is a playset, do what you will with it.
It's a sandbox.
And people have modded it, and people have changed it, and people have created whole other games with these core mechanics and with these, environments.
Yeah, and even SimCity, with all its problems, has millions of players online playing. And it's just a game that you're just placing buildings and zoning, and there's no killing. Obviously you can do disasters and stuff like that, but these games have their place. People like the big blockbusters. They like Transformers, no matter how bad it is. They're gonna go see it.
The first one was good.
They're gonna go buy it because they want that. They know that they threw a bunch of money at it, and it's highly developed, it's big blockbuster, it's you want that. Mm-hmm. Even though there's tons of indie awesome games out there, they're gonna go towards the ones that are marketed the most, and the Halo 4, the Assassin's Creed, the
which
Gears
you could
of War.
Say about most things. You could say that about music, film.
Exactly.
I've got a wonderful graph here, actually, which charts Michael Bay's career.
Oh, can we show this to the audience, please? Oh,
yeah,
wait.
Yeah,
because as we all know, high production value equals good movie.
No. It's the success of the movie relative to the number of explosions.
Wow.
Oh, that is
box
surprisingly
office
surprisingly up.
Wow. Yeah, every that's successive incredible movie Michael Bay has made.
Transformers 3, 283 explosions.
283 things exploded in that movie.
Well, of course, now I want to know what movie had the most explosions.
Well, that would be
probably
Transformers
3.
No. I mean, of all time. Of all the movies.
I'm saying. It's probably.
It sounds like you're a Google search away.
It's true. Maybe I'll pull that up.
So I don't Does anybody else have? It's a complicated thing.
What it almost seems like is that we're getting this sort of the polarization of the market. And at this point, if you want violent games, you want the big titles, you get an Xbox or you get a PS3.
Mm-hmm.
If you want child-friendly TV games, you get like a Nintendo Wii or a Wii U. And for everyone else in between, you have just get a computer or an iOS device or an Android device. So much is migrating towards the whole idea of like the mobile gaming device was originally the Game Boy. And and now it's been completely replaced. Everyone's phone can play everything. Yeah. I can get Sonic the Hedgehog on my phone.
Huge for kids is iPad.
I see that
everywhere. It's, which is horrible that parents are using it to distract their kids so they don't have to deal with
okay,
them.
Grandpa.
But that's another another topic. That's
television has been doing that for
Exactly.
You know,
it's not a new thing, but now they can be in the grocery store and not deal with their kids screaming because they want something because they're playing a game. Playing Farmville or whatever.
It's a poor excuse for bad parenting.
Well, the N64 was my nanny growing up.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, everybody had that. I mean, that everybody.
I didn't. I did not. The first time I ever got a console was in college.
Well,
ever owned.
And it turned out okay.
I had some of the.
Yeah. Right.
I was more of the Nintendo. I wasn't the frat boy until high school, and mm-hmm. I started getting a job. Then I finally got the Xbox after it was like. It was like Halo 2 was already out for a little bit.
I feel like mm-hmm. Xbox from the beginning was marketed towards that older demographic,
yeah.
though.
Yeah.
Because they were
big
growing
boy
up.
Console.
Yeah, they, even, you know, even the controller was designed for a bigger hand.
Yeah.
It was
the Duke.
Awful controller.
I absolutely loved the Duke. I will take that hands down. If someone made a USB version of that will work with the new Xbox, you contact me. I will pay you. I would love to have that controller again.
Oh, man.
Loved it. I have really long fingers.
I think they were all collected and burned.
Melted down. Yeah, I wonder what they're... I still wonder... Like, I thought Microsoft would come out right away with...
It's following Sony.
You know,
I mean, they have given Sony a very large head start.
Yeah, but at the same
time... How much of a head start is it really, though?
That's a thing.
We haven't even seen
it. It depends what they can offer.
Because PS3 has said, oh, we're going to make a PS4. Who didn't know that already? Who didn't know that they were going to make a PS4? And so it's not like they really gave much away. Plus, all they showed was a controller. They didn't show
the
actual
thing.
No, they
didn't show the box, but that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter.
Well, so much
what
is
matters
based on what
it's placed in that
getting.
Seed.
But that,
in people's minds.
But you could take the components and you could put it into a toaster and it would work.
I
it doesn't
totally
matter
buy that.
What the plastic box looks like. Everybody was up in arms after this Sony press conference because they're like, oh, they didn't show the consoles. Like, they showed what mattered. They told you what was going
to
be in it.
But at the same time,
it's sexy to look at the.
And
yeah.
the other
it
thing
is but
they
what
can,
I'm saying is you can't discount it because they didn't show.
Well,
that.
But the other thing is that I read an article in Wired about they were comparing like the promises that they were made, people were made about the PS3, and the promises that they were made about the PS4, and so many promises about the PS3 never panned through. So I think part of the thing is they didn't show the console. So for all we know, behind the curtain, because they did some live demos, right?
Oh yeah, they had
so
a lot of
for
stuff
all we know,
running.
Yeah. Behind
they
the
were
curtain,
probably on PCs.
Well, yeah, they were, yeah,
well, yeah. For all we know, it was a PC or it was a box the size of a kitchen table that had all this stuff in it, and so many features they'll never be able to get shrunk down into the console.
Well,
they already have tablets with that same specs, though.
Yeah, the
with
deal
8 gigs of RAM and whatnot.
Yeah,
that's not that amazing.
You made me lose my train of thought, David.
Well, my point being, there's from what my research is on, Sony at this point has a track record from the PS3.
Oh.
Of they don't follow through on these things. They were said, oh, you're gonna be able to play PS2 games on the PS3. You can't do it. You can't do it for a lot of them.
Look at it this way: the original if you take a launch title from the PS3 and you put it next to a game that was just released for the PS3, if you take BioShock Infinite and you put it next to Resistance, you're gonna be shocked. If you put Skyrim next to Oblivion, that was a really interesting screenshot comparison that I saw. But because the problem with the PS3 was its architecture. Mm-hmm. That
the processor was it was built off a PowerPC, actually.
Yeah, yeah. But that custom architecture that they created was just super hard to deal with. Mm. So developers had...
It wasn't just that. Is that it wasn't easy to port over.
Yes,
so,
that was exactly why.
So like for Microsoft games, you could have a Microsoft developer... make it for PC, and
yes,
then just like over a course of a couple of days, make it into an Xbox game,
yep.
or
yep.
vice versa. Which I have my qualms with.
And you're gonna have the same problem with these new ones too. It's
well, the PS3
is vastly different than these old consoles. This architecture, and
it's
the problem with the launches. All these big IP products, they have to develop for the old and the new, and they're going to be limited doing that. They can't completely
make use of all the new stuff that they have to count on the old.
Well, so like Assassin's Creed, Black Flag, whatever.
And
I think there was an article like one. They're the Witcher 3 or something like that.
Assassin's
they're like
Kings.
They're only doing next gen.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of that are making just the straight jump to next gen.
Yeah.
And I think what we're gonna see when it really comes down to it, when you have a game that's released for the PS3 and the PS4 at the exact same time, I think you're going to see some more high-res textures on the PS3 simply because it's got more RAM. Other than that,
at
launch, I don't think there's going to be that much
difference. There's more gameplay structure things that can happen now because
there
of
some
the
PS3.
Processor power and the memory that you can't take. You can't program that in both games and take advantage
of it.
The way I
think about it is like you have games that you can run on the iPad 3. And you have games that you can run on the iPad 2. It'll still run on the iPad 2, but it's not going to run quite as nice. It's not going to be quite as smooth, whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same with old games. I was trying to load some of my old... Some of them are still like First Age of Empires. I got to load on Windows 8 just fine.
Really?
It quirks, but this other Star Wars game that was based on the 95 system, like all the textures,
most stable system,
all the textures are upside down. In the
oh,
game.
Really?
So I was like, I could not play it. Like I can't do this.
Just flip your screen upside down or hold a mirror up. Or
well,
something.
No, the
not the models, the textures were.
Yeah,
I see. Oh, I thought you just meant the screen was flipped for some reason.
Yeah, so they'd have like a button, but it would have a picture on it,
and the
picture would be
that's funny.
Destroyer would be upside down, but there's so many you have to buy emulators, and then even then you have to, the processor is not clocked right, and it speeds it up because the speed of the animations is based on the process. It's pretty complicated.
I do think though this will be the last generation of consoles that has a disk drive. After this, it'll be gone.
Yeah.
I think because everything's going digital.
I mean, if it lasts another 8 years, if the PS4 comes out and it's another 6-7 year console cycle, I think you're right.
Yeah, but also kind of depends on the structure of the internet and how much faster it gets and how much able you.
Well,
my point being is that the whole push for digital content is so you can download it, you can watch it wherever. But if you have to start paying for data just as much as you do like right now. For your phone,
yeah. Well, that's also bringing up another huge just problem with the internet service providers in the United States, because for the same price that we're paying for slow as heck, I don't, are we swearing on this?
Slow as hell
internet that we're getting right now. Do you know what the internet connection speed is in our house offhand? The average?
We can get an average about like one to two megabits up, and then
they just doubled mine.
For the same price overseas, it's like 3 or 4 times faster than that. For the same price.
Who uploaded that video with that YouTube channel that did the parody of the, was that not
oh,
you
the
guys?
Honest, the Honest.
No, that was me.
Yeah, the, an yeah, honest.
Do you know what YouTube channel was?
Internet or cable provider ad.
It's like something decent films, very decent films. I mean,
it was really well,
really
put together.
Poignant.
Yeah.
Because
here at your local cable and internet provider, we don't believe in customer satisfaction. We believe in money. Pools of money.
And you know, in the U.S., like, we have anti-monopoly laws, but we have monopolies. Like, there really is no choice.
That's what the video's about.
Yeah, there's the whole handful.
What is it called?
Bring in this back around.
Oh, yeah, oligopoly or whatever.
Oligopoly.
It's like a monopoly, but legal.
Bring in this back around to the original point of this tangent. The disk drive is going to stay around until the internet is so ubiquitous that they can not, you know, because
you have to start with the young generation of not being comfortable with not having it, because even myself, like, even though I like streaming, I think Wade's probably the most. He started as soon as iTunes came out with digital downloads, like, mm-hmm. he was all over that for movies and stuff. But at some point, like, I still like having that physical.
I completely agree. Like, I hate that the new I kind of hate that the new iMacs don't have disk drivers anymore.
Because when you think about it, like that was saying like the always on features. Like, they're even saying the Xbox has to be always on internet.
Yeah.
To be able to play, ridiculous. I don't think that they would do that, but maybe they will. But even like SimCity, like, you have to be on the internet to play it. So once EA goes away and decides not to support their servers, which hopefully they won't do for a long time, like 10 years from now or 20, like, I can't play that game.
Yep.
Even though I paid $60, mm-hmm. like my Age of Empires that is really old, like I loaded on Windows 8 and I can play it.
But the thing about that though is that even though right now they require you to have an internet connection to play SimCity, you can still play it without an internet connection. There's been modders who've been able to who have been able to get it to work.
Yeah,
without,
to circumvent.
Yeah, that. Circumvent it. So to say to counter your argument,
but I don't want to do that.
Yeah, but further down that line, like eventually when they say we're going to drop the servers connections for these things, so we'll just have you run a script so you can display it whenever you want. I mean that could eventually happen. That could be their solution.
But
I agree with you.
That game though,
wrong.
It relies on the servers to make calculations.
It doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
They have modded it to turn it off.
Certain parts of it, you lose certain capabilities.
Not in any of the reviews I saw. Apparently, they still had everything. They could move outside of the city limits and everything.
You just couldn't save.
Yeah, they couldn't save, so you need to go back online to save.
That's I guess maybe they could mod it. But I don't know.
But hopefully the future isn't headed that way. I mean, because it's nice to have your
like
N64 and you can always snap in the cartridge and play it.
But
yeah, there's something to be said for that. And I still, even with all these, you know, internet radio and Groove Shark and things like that, I still try to have all of my music in my iTunes. I've got 7,200 songs in my iTunes. What are you doing that for?
It is headed that way, and you know, you have Office 365. You don't own the Google
Adobe
laptop thing. Like,
oh yeah, Adobe too.
You just the Chromebook. You go online, like, and use this stuff.
And mm-hmm. another further problem with that was brought up by one of the early architects of the internet after it started to spread outside of CERN, is we have no plan B for the internet. If the internet goes down, we have, at this point, even though the internet's been around for, I don't even know how long.
Why
it's been
would
around
it go down?
No, like, say something were to happen, not the whole internet, but say a huge section were to go down, we have pipe sewage systems, power systems that are all based on internet control. And if they fail, they're gone. We have no backup. We have no like subset internet system that is like a closed network, and we only flip it on when we need to. Like, when that happens,
I'm sure
it's all fix.
Yeah. And here's a funny story to illustrate a point. Back in the day, maybe 15 years ago, there was a big fat cable conduit that ran under the, I think it was the 35W bridge. And one night, somebody got down there and they built a campfire. Some vagabond or something was down there, and they accidentally burned through the cable and shut down the internet for like half of Minneapolis until they figured out what was going on. But at that point they realized, oh, we probably shouldn't have all the internet going through one cable on one bridge.
All right. Well, there's probably not a way to tie that back into your original topic of the guy in his
I don't think it didn't have a final like.
No, it was just let's talk.
It started our conversation, which brought us in a lot of different ways.
Right.
So.
Okay. Well, if there's nothing else to add.
Well, we're gonna be Game of Thrones.
Ahead.
Okay.
No, we get to go watch that now. Second episode.
Oh. Yep.
It's funny because I've spent so much time like excited and waiting for Game of Thrones season 3 that it's odd for me to think, oh, there's an episode tonight. I could be excited.
I totally forgot about it.
Yeah.
I was a little disappointed by the first episode, but
you're disappointed by everything.
It was a lot of setup. Like, they didn't.
Well, that's what it was
just
the
like
first
all
episode.
Talking.
You know what? One of these days, something's going to come along that's going to be perfect for you, Lee.
You are going to be perfectly whelmed.
Nothing's ever perfect.
There's no pleasing Lee.
Not seen any Apple product? They're all perfect. Steve Jobs told us so.
Even the iPlayer.
Okay, we're going to have to make this episode come to a close. So thanks for listening, everybody, and make sure to tune in next time when we blow your minds with hard-hitting, fast intersection awesomeness.
That's right.